Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is Halftime Adjustments on WPXI Now.
Good evening. Happy Wednesday. We are over the hump. Officially, well, almost. And this is Halftime Adjustments. Albie Oxenrider here on WPXI Now, joined by our buddy from DKPittsburghSports.com, Chris Carter. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing great, Albie. How you doing?
Well, it's that post-draft period where everybody can kind of throw an opinion in and give their two cents on how things went for the Steelers. Let me just say, and I'm anxious to hear what you think from top to bottom, but let me just say right off the bat, drafts are made beyond the first round. It's those diamonds in the rough, maybe that you find in the middle rounds, and you can never rule out a diamond in the rough. But just from the top, it started in a good way. I think their top pick is a home run, if I can switch to the other sport for a second. He seems like a solid pick and could or will be a star for the Steelers. But your thoughts on that pick and then the rest of the picks for the Steelers?
Well, it doesn't matter what I think. I mean, what it matters is that they went and got the guy that everybody was talking about. I mean, when we did that pre-draft show, Albie, you, me, I think all but two people said that they were picking Najee Harris. And they went and got him. This was the consensus top running back in the NFL draft. You know, there are some people out there who said, oh, maybe Travis Etienne, but this was the guy. He blocks, he runs, he catches, he makes people miss. He has the best vision. He's physical. He does all the things you want. And so, yes, Najee Harris, big get. But you're right. It's about how they build off of the first round pick, because you can have a great first round pick, and if you have the rest of your picks are light and guys that aren't going to contribute, you're going to have a rough path moving forward. But where I think it could be very interesting is you look at how these first four picks went. All offense for the first time since 1984. But Pat Freiermuth, a tight end, arguably the second best tight end of this class. You look at him, you're hoping that maybe he can help with the blocking. But both those linemen they got in the third and fourth round, Kendrick Green out of Illinois and Dan Moore Jr. out of Texas A&M, those are run blocking first type of linemen. Those are the kind of guys. And I asked Adrian Clem, the new offensive line coach, like, you know, hey, like, what'd you see in this guy? What had you guys excited to get this guy? And oftentimes it was talking about nasty demeanor. It was about, changing the tone of which the Steelers offensive line plays. And I think that's definitely where they're going here, is that they want guys who are out there to push people around, create space for the running game, and then build off of that with the talented running back they got in the first round.
Hey, listen, the first round, as you mentioned, was no surprise. It's who most people thought they should have gone after. He's a quality pick, and I don't think anybody's going to deny that. We'll find out, of course, in 6 to 9 months on any of these. Any analysis on any of these picks really won't come into play until the season begins. But on paper, it looks like that number one pick's a home run. The first surprise was that second round pick. I mean, I think a lot of people were a little taken off guard. And this gets back to what we were talking about last week, Chris, and that is, once you get that player that you want, or even if you don't get that player that you want, when it's your time to pick, if who you wanted is not there, then it's time to go to your list of best available players at their position, regardless of what needs they might fill. Well, certainly he fills a tight end need, that especially one that's willing to block and able to block and will block with quality. But it took everybody off guard, I think. Is it safe to say when they took that tight end in the second round?
I think it caught people off guard because there were so many of those centers we talked about being second round centers available right then and there. Some people wanted Josh Myers. Some people wanted Creed Humphrey. Landon Dickerson was already gone. Quinn Miners was still on the board. But I think it's interesting because, you know, in my film analysis, when I was looking at both Josh Myers and Creed Humphrey, the thing I saw with those guys was that they weren't physical blow you up in the hole type of guys. They were more so win leverage battles, keep everyone on the same page type of centers, guys who could be useful in the NFL, but they're not the style of center that the Steelers are claiming they would be looking for to be able to generate the run. Kendrick Green does fit that. Now, I do think Landon Dickerson would have fit that, but again, he was picked early in the second round by the Eagles, so that wasn't available. I think Quinn Miners also could have fit that, but they were like, you know what, we're going to go with a guy that played Big Ten football, that played against, you know, guys like that. And even though Kendrick Green only played 3 games at center, they wanted him. He's a road grader. He moves people around, and he can pull and hit in space. Humphrey that and Myers, that was not their specialty. They were more zone blocking, slide down the line, shield their side off type of guys.
Yeah, and when you look at, when you go into a draft saying we need X, Y, and Z, I think sometimes the draft takes a different path just because of where you might be picking and who might be available at that time. But as you look at the overall draft, top to bottom for the Steelers, did they address their needs? We know they addressed their needs at running back, and the reasons you just mentioned, there's a couple of guys that could be good run blockers and maybe more. Talk a little bit about what maybe thinks there's an area that they did not address that they should have.
Well, I thought Buddy Johnson was a good inside linebacker pick for the fourth round that's going to fill that need. But there's still major concerns in the secondary and at the backup edge rusher positions. They didn't get their slot corner. You know, Trey Norwood, seventh round, maybe he works out. We don't know. But seventh round picks, you're not banking on those guys to make a difference. And they got Quincy Roche. Okay, guy projected by some to be a fourth, fifth round pick guy that was available in the sixth. Good, but you still need to get a guy who you're feeling comfortable to at least pair with Roche to take some of the snaps away from TJ Watt and Alex Highsmith to keep them fresh during the games. There's still plenty of free agents available, Albie. I think it would behoove them to look at slot cornerbacks. Brian Poole is a 28-year-old guy who's still out there that they could probably get for a decent price. I'd still look at edge rusher. There's veterans like Melvin Ingram and Justin Houston who you could bring in and say, hey, all you're here to do is be a pass rushing specialist on certain downs when we sub you in. You don't have to do anything else. I think that the Steelers could be looking at a couple of those moves, but those are certainly things they didn't hit on in their NFL draft that they're going to need to address because you don't want those weaknesses going into the season.
And maybe a punter who could be a short down yardage back. All right, we're going to get back and talk more when we come back here in Halftime Adjustments. Thanks for your thoughts, Chris. Back right after this.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome back to Halftime Adjustments. I'm Albie Oxenrider with Chris Carter. And Chris, we were planning on talking about the rest of the AFC North and how things stack up right now, who you might see as the favorite in the division, who you see as second, where do the Steelers fit in. We might get into that. But since we put together this line of topics, this list of topics, Alejandro Villanueva just signed a 2-year deal with the Baltimore Ravens. Naturally, this is the big rivalry, and there's got to be a villain in this rivalry. All of a sudden, Alejandro Villanueva is talking a little subtle trash, or maybe not so subtle. Let me just read you this quote, and you take it from there. He says, quote, I'm assuming it's not as much fun for the receivers because they're not getting all the catches. They're making the TikToks, and they're having fun on their social media. And he refers to playing for a run-first team like the Ravens. So that's taking a shot at the system, a subtle shot perhaps at Ben. and certainly Juju is there as well. Your thoughts on all that?
And on top of that, he was asked about playing with his new teammates. He said Kevin Zeitler was an upgrade over David DeCastro. Now, listen, if you didn't like Juju's TikToks, that first of all, you're weird. You're doing that. But then if you're out here trying to come at David DeCastro, a several times all-pro Pro Bowl guard who was a much better lineman than the Villanueva ever has been, I find that kind of funny. And I also find it very interesting because it makes it seem like he left there on bad terms. And maybe he felt like he was deserved something. I'll tell you what, Albie, when I watched the Steelers offensive line, Villanueva was a weak link. And I know that Marquise Pouncey wasn't playing as well as he used to. But, I mean, this was a guy, when he came to run blocking, he wasn't getting his job done. He was getting whipped. And plenty of times you were like, what's going on over there, 78? So for him to say these type of things now coming out to the Steelers, especially with the way that his career started, where he was brought into the organization as an undrafted player, and he came in and he said, and they gave him a legit role in this. That's where I'm kind of like, oh, okay, you had that. Now, is there a chance that this was more joking and lighthearted? Possibly, but why not like make that privately to them? Why not text that to them? Be like, hey, let's just joke around with my buddies. You know, I maybe it was, and I'm sure the Steelers will play it off like it doesn't matter, but it came off a little weird to honestly hear this from Villanueva after, you know, again, he was undrafted. They gave him a chance here, and they paid him a lot of money to stick around over the past, what, 8 seasons?
Yeah, and also he said part of the motivation for wanting to go to Baltimore was the opportunity to play the Steelers twice a year. I think there's any chance this will motivate the Steelers as if they need any more motivation. But here's a guy who they treated pretty well and was a let's face it, you know, Alejandro Villanueva was a great story. And I think a lot of people respected what he had done. And not only in the locker room, but I think in the Steelers Nation, there was a lot of respect for Villanueva because of his background and because of the sacrifices that he made for the country. But all of a sudden, he's down in Baltimore and this kind of stuff comes out, and that might be adding to this rivalry. Not that you needed any fuel on the fire, but this might be it.
Well, the Steelers will hold the front that they're playing this off. It's not that big a deal. They won't make it known, you know, during the offseason or leading up to the game. They'll just be like, haha, okay, we're just focused. You know, the Ravens are the Ravens. We're just focused on them. But what I do think is going to happen is in some of those meetings, they're going to talk about, okay, y'all, he was talking about y'all. Just remember that as you lift your weights this week, just remember that as you guys get ready to face him. I mean, to be honest, I like the Steelers' chances lining up against this guy, whether he lines up at right or left tackle, going up against T.J. Watt or Alex Highsmith. I think both of those guys stand a good chance of beating him more than a few times in a game. So I'm interested to see the way that he works, man, because, you know, maybe this is just a joke. Maybe this is them just having fun. But with as many comments, it'd be different if he said one little thing here. And it was like, haha, no, I have a lot of respect for those guys, blah, blah, blah. But it was several comments that he's now made, where he's kind of coming at the Steelers and especially to say that another guy is an upgrade over David DeCastro. I was like, wow, okay, guy. So, I'm interested to see where this rivalry goes. I mean, Steelers-Ravens already naturally has that nastiness to it, that sense of respect between the two teams, but also the sense of we want to beat you, a whole lot. That's been there for a long time. Now, Villanueva going over there and saying these things, Albie, there could be an extra charge up in it, and I'd be interested because – it's been a while since we've seen some dust-ups between the Steelers and the Ravens that got real serious, in the middle of a game.
All right, well, let's segue into what we were going to talk about the AFC North. And how do you think you see things stacking up? Where do you see the Ravens? Where do you see the Browns? And most importantly, where do you see the Steelers? I think it's safe to say that after last season, many people felt that the Steelers were the third-best team in that division. Have they improved their standing in your mind?
Well, I'd say that the Steelers won the division last year. They had a rough playoff game to end the season. But I'd say that if you look at these three teams, they're right in the mix with everyone else. I mean, the Browns didn't do a whole lot in this draft that made me say, wow, I'm going to be astounded by these picks. You know, I think Greg Newsom could work as a number two cornerback. I think that Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, athletic, off-ball linebacker who can fly all over the place. But the reason I said the Steelers shouldn't get him is because he's not much of a run stuffer when it comes to dealing with offensive linemen that are coming at him. And I think that could be something, if the Steelers become a more running team this year, that's something that they could be happy to exploit. And then as far as the Ravens, they got Rashad Bateman, another stab at an early round receiver to try and change things up here. So, I mean, that's cool. I think the Ravens will compete as always. They got Lamar Jackson. He's one of the more talented guys in the NFL. He'll keep them competitive. I'm not sold on the Bengals though. I'm sorry. Until they show their offensive line is going to protect Joe Burrow, I'm worried about that team and keeping that franchise quarterback upright. But the Steelers, they're right in the mix with everybody right now.
No question. Agree with that. All right. Back with more of Halftime Adjustments right after this. Welcome back to Halftime Adjustments. Of course, we have to talk a little hockey now because it's getting to be that time. It's almost time for the Stanley Cup playoffs. Only two games remaining for the Penguins. There's a lot of talk this past week, Chris, about violence in the NHL. Let's talk a little bit about what Tom Wilson did. You know, he had a punch to the head, which he was fined $5,000 for. Then you had a body slam, which received no disciplinary action. Then the Flyers, Penguins game had a little ugliness in it. Just talk about where hockey is right now and how inconsistent it seems to be with what they penalize, what they discipline, and what they don't.
I'll say one thing. That's not what's up, because it is just it seems like the hockey is doing kind of what the NFL was doing years ago when they were doling out punishments. And I guess I say years ago because we haven't seen it as big in the last couple seasons because Vontaze Burfict is gone. But, you know, it feels like, you know, they slap a whole bunch of punishments on a wheel. They spin it and they say, aha, that's what we're going to do here. There's no consistency. It seems so random here. When you look at Tom Wilson, you see what that man did, pulling the man by his hair, putting him to the ground, and then once he's in the ground, they're punching him in the back of his head, and now this guy can't play anymore. And you see what's going on there, and then you see the reaction. I gotta say, the best thing that I thought came of this was the Rangers' response, their organized statement, where they came out and said, "Is like, no, this the man who runs this needs to be let go. He is not able to fulfill his duties right now, and this is putting people at risk." And Albie, you know, sometimes when these type of things happen, when players and coaches and staff members are feeling like there's a guy out here that's a danger to us, and that he is not being reprimanded, and that he continues to hurt people and just get off scot-free or get a slap on the wrist, players are going to start taking this into their own hands. They're going to start feeling like, well, if they won't enforce the law, we will. And I'm not advocating for that. I'm just telling you that's what the way athletes think often is that, you know what, we're going to be the ones that are the enforcers. I mean, and heck, look at what the Steelers did for years. They pointed at Vontaze Burfict. They said, look at how dangerous this man is. And it didn't stop the NFL. He kept coming back. What stopped Vontaze Burfict? Juju Smith-Schuster laying him out and putting him out. And then after that, Vontaze Burfict went away very quickly after that. He wasn't that much of a factor for disrupting the Steelers after that hit. I'm not saying that people should put a hit on Tom Wilson. I'm saying that people are going to start talking about, if the NHL doesn't do their jobs, teams are going to say, we have to protect ourselves, and it means getting rid of that guy somehow. I'm worried that this is going to get much uglier, and that this is going to create something that the NHL does not want to have to be a spectacle on national television, especially when they're getting ready to expand to ESPN. They need to do things that draw in more viewers, more watchers, more fans. And listen, fights themselves can be, you know, entertaining, and people are like, yeah, I get really excited about it, but not the way Wilson's doing it, and not the way that someone's going to want to do it if he keeps getting away with it, Albie.
All right. Goss Despair with a shove of Friedman after the empty net goal into the boards. Friedman wasn't expecting it naturally and went into the boards kind of hard and was able to walk away from that. But there will be a hearing now on that. I think that's, you know, there was some, just it's gotten to a point where if the talk is about the inconsistency and the way they hand out punishment for the physical style of play. Well, I think it's not necessarily the physical style of play. It's criticism of the lack of discipline that they're handing out for that physical type of play. I think that's when you move into a whole nother problem. Inconsistency does not sit well. There will always be ugliness in sports. There will always be violence in sports. Go back to Atkinson and Tatum and the old Raiders. Yeah. There will always be, you mentioned Burfict, and in this case, Tom Wilson. There are always those guys who you expect that kind of play from, but there has to be a consistent and a committed message from the Department of Player Safety, or this will get out of hand even more so than it already has.
That's my point here, Albie. It's an administrative thing right now, you know, because if they continue to send the message, this is okay, it's also sending the message to the other Tom Wilsons of the league. It's like, oh, we can get away with that. Oh, okay. $5,000, no problem. And I can see that becoming a bigger problem here. They have to corral this in and stop this from spreading like wildfire across the NHL. Because again, it won't just be Tom Wilson. It'll be people going after Tom Wilson. Then it'll be the Caps going for their retaliation. And then it'll be back and forth, crazy cheap shots. And then someone's going to get seriously hurt. It's going to be violent. It's going to be dirty. It's going to put a huge stain on the game. They don't need that right now. So if it takes getting a new person in charge to put up some new rules or some new way to enforce the rules, do it. Do something. But right now, I think the Rangers are completely in the right. The NHL, you are doing yourselves, you're doing the players a disservice by allowing that man to continue to play without severe punishments to show the NHL that what he's doing is unacceptable. Because Albie, if you keep letting him do it, it's just going to send the message. Why not? Why not Joe Schmo? Like, hey, you know, I'm going to do it because it's clearly allowed here. So totally here. I'm on your side. I think there's something needs to be done, and it's at an administrative level. It's finding a way to, and if it takes recategorizing, what these different penalties are and what causes a different fine or a different punishment, fine, do that, but do it expeditiously, because if you waste time and they get to the playoffs and someone gets seriously injured, and not that someone who's not a star is any less important than someone who is a star, but if a Connor McDavid, a Sidney Crosby, if one of those guys takes a crazy headshot that takes them out for the rest of the season, the NHL is going to be like, oh man, that's not what we wanted to happen here, and then it's going to be too late. So take action now before more people actually get hurt and suffer longer term injuries, or this gets a lot more violent.
All right, Pens with two games remaining in the regular season, Buffalo Thursday night and then Saturday. All right, back with our final moments here on Halftime Adjustments right after this. And back with our final moments here on Halftime Adjustments. Hey, we may as well jump into baseball a little bit. The Pirates are out west. You know, they had that rough series in St. Louis after they had, they were at 500 and everybody was feeling pretty good. And then they had that rough weekend in St. Louis. They had a no-hitter, Chris, a couple nights ago, going into the late innings, ended up losing the game. But, you know, they're hanging tough. And I think that although it might not be the standard that some people like to see, certainly people would like to see them competing for a division, not just for 500. But that's where they are right now.
That's where they are, Albie, and you're starting to see some of the realities come through when you don't have a lineup. Guys are going to struggle to hit, and we've seen that. I mean, it was, 22 innings before they got their first run, in a while. That's the struggle that they were going through, Albie, was just like, man, it is getting rough to get runs on the board, to get consecutive hits. So absolutely looking at some concerns here for the Pirates. But again, we knew this was coming. It's about, can they keep fighting? Can they make games competitive? That's what fans want to see. I think they'll continue to see. So again, it's about who pokes up and makes a name for themselves. I think that some guys are doing that now.
Well, they're doing that, and it will be a work in progress, which again, everyone knew. And as long as that was the feeling in people's minds going in, then it will all be fine. All right. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate your thoughts on everything today. And thank you for being with us on Halftime Adjustments. I'm Albie Oxenreiter for Chris Carter. See you next time on WPXI Now.